Good evening. Thank you for your patience. Welcome to the Morro Bay Tuesday, January 28th, 2011 City Council meeting. Let the record reflect that all members of City Council are here, and we'll begin, please, with a moment of silence. And if you would please stand and face the flag, we'll be led in the pledge by Mr. Barry Brannan.
Good evening, ready? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our esteemed city manager, Andrea Luker, is on vacation, and Police Chief Tim Olivas is acting city manager this week, doing a fabulous job. But sitting in the city manager's seat for the purposes of this meeting tonight is Rob Schultz, who will be handling those duties. Good luck with that, Rob. The big news is that State Parks has received funding to resurface the lower very hard. To get this reestablished again, and we are on that road. It's not a done deal, but we're working at it, and I want to thank the police chief and Andrea for their efforts on that. And finally, probably everybody's going to say a word on the 4th of July coming up. Big doings on the waterfront and at Tidelands Park all day long, bands, lots for the family, alcohol free, and of course, right after dark, the fireworks display. So come on out and enjoy the fireworks and all day down there. Carla?
Good evening. Thank you. Just a reminder, there's no harbor meeting this coming next week in July. It's canceled. And I have some wonderful news to share from the police department. Last week, there was a canine walk down at the beach, and that raised a little over $5,000, $5,100 approximately, which brought them up to over $55,000, and a $5,000 donation came in from Miss Giannini to bring the balance to $60,000, meet the goal, and hopefully real soon we'll be seeing a canine and car and everything that goes with it in action. So congratulations. It's a lot of work and effort by the community and the police department, so thank you.
Thanks. Thank you. Good going, Chief. Good going to everybody, the friends of the police department and everybody involved, the hundreds of people. Nancy?
I just have to add that we were among the hundreds of people down there with my grandson who was able to rent a dog for the day from Woods, and that was just, it was a wonderful day. You guys did such a great job. The county committee to celebrate the centennial of the women's right to vote met last week, and we've picked a date for the big county celebration, which Morro Bay will be part of, and that will be October 10th at the Dalladay Adobe. It will be an event free to everyone. And speaking of our local suffragists, keep an eye out for a little surprise at the 4th of July celebration.
We're on pins and needles.
I'm sure you are.
George? Noah?
Thank you. I would like to start by just announcing a little bit of an update regarding state parks and the budget proposals that have come down from the state of California that include closure of Atascadero Beach campground and multiple other parks throughout the state. And the Central Coast Natural History Association held a meeting to update the community on the state of those closures and to give us more information about the process and things people can do locally that are concerned about the closure potential. And it was really good, well-attended meeting. And one of the key pieces of information out of that was that July 15, 2012 is actually the formal adoption date for the budget. So there is some time between now and when those closures would actually be implemented, although there is a potential in the short term some state parks would be closed. But Atascadero Beach, at this point, looks like it's safe until that 15th of July 2012. So in the short term, if you are concerned about that, then the Natural History Association has invited people to sign up through their website or email to get more information. And what they're doing is really getting together locals who are interested and are going to help connect those voices with the larger state movement. So if you are interested and would like to participate, you can either email Mary Goldman at info@ccnha.org or give her a call at 772-2694, extension 102. So once again, the email is info@ccnha.org. And our number is 772-2694, extension 102. And the website is www.ccnha.org. The other thing I'd like to mention is that we have had our two public workshops for the wastewater treatment plan alternatives analysis. We had our second today, this afternoon, and yesterday, and they're both well attended. And just wanted to say thank you for everyone who showed up to those and for our staff for putting those together. And it's also announced that the comment period for what you would like to see in the alternatives analysis and what you feel is important has been extended from July 1st all the way through the 15th. And there's an online comment form at the city's homepage as well as at the project site within the homepage. So if you would like to make comments, we have extended the deadline for those. And the process will be updating, going through and developing the draft report, and then there will actually be room for another public input and comment period before it's formally adopted and then going further into the fine screening analysis. And my last comment is on the 4th, there's going to be another of the community bike rides to kick off the celebration, and that's going to start at the Rock at 1 p.m. and end at Tidelands Park. And there are going to be as many riders, if not many more, than last year. So if you
visit, so we'll be able to know how many people are coming in those extended hours. We're tracking restroom-only visits and keeping those separate from the total visits, so we'll be able to report that to you. We researched the California State Welcome Centers, and it's unlikely that Morro Bay would qualify because we're within 50 miles of Pismo Beach, which is a welcome center. Let's see, what else did I have? I wanted to add that one of the requirements that was asked of the chamber to add city manager as a voting member of the executive committee has been accomplished, and Andrea has been a great addition to the chamber. And actually, we want to thank you for suggesting that move. That was a great addition. Fiscal transparency, we are providing the city with profit and loss detailed statements every month. And also providing fiscal information to TBID and CPC. And I'm also looking for skateboard event volunteers, if I can change channels a little bit. On Sunday, July 3rd, it's going to be the Morro Bay Mile Skateboard Longboard Push Race and World Record Attempt. And we still need some volunteers to help with that. And also, we need volunteers for the 4th of July, both the evening of the 3rd of July for cleanup and then during the day of the 4th of July. And a thank you to Harold Biagini. It was discussed about the billboard and the weeds. He had a crew that went out there the next day after the last council meeting and whacked down a bunch of weeds. And we've also contracted with somebody to go out there and finish the job. So thank you to Harold from Embarcadero. And thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Craig. Thanks. I've noticed the billboard. It's visible now. It's improved 1,000%. Who would like to come up next? Anybody? John Barta. Hi, John.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. My name is John Barta. First of all, I too want to thank Harold Biagini for going out there and doing what hadn't been done for a very long time. I don't think it changes the point that I was trying to make, which is that there's this gap in our way of doing business with regards to promotion. Congratulations on the dog. with regards to the California Welcome Center, there is a 50-mile rule, but since we are on a different highway, we're on Highway 1, not Highway 101, there is a chance they might do it anyway. So I would say don't give up on that possibility because of that circumstance. Regarding the community bus idea. Good luck with that one. In the pavement management plan, again, everything starts with a plan and with knowledge, and you've heard me say this before about other things. And so I congratulate you on getting that going. With regards to improvements at the Rock parking lot, you know, we're known as the Gibraltar of the Pacific. I mean, that is the far outside identity for our town is the Rock. I mean, people may not know about all the stuff that goes on inside the town, but they know about that Rock. So we should be treating the Rock with the respect that it deserves as far as our promoting our city goes. And unfortunately, the area right around the Rock is more like craters of the moon, particularly in the winter. Every winter it gets pounded, water is kind of lays there, holes get created, and then the rain stops, and then people drive through those holes and they get deeper, and then we end up by the end of the rainy season with this moonscape out there that's really ugly. And we could have something so much more than that, because when people come here, the first thing they want to do is see the Rock, and it's a really important thing, I think, that's been overlooked for a very long time. So I hope that when you get to that item that you're tenacious and that you're aggressive with your suggestions on that, and that you work hard to make something of that, because I do believe that that will add a lot to our town. And just imagine what it would be like with a whole bunch of cars parked out there. Those cars won't just stay out there. They'll come down to the rest of the town. They'll spend their money. They'll fatten our coffers. They'll help fund our police department and all the other things we enjoy. So good luck with that item. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Who would like to go next? Betty? Good evening, Betty.
Good evening. My name is Betty Winholtz. You have three items on your agenda this evening that all have to do with budget, and it's really difficult to understand how you're going to deal with those when you haven't brought the budget forward. So I see it as kind of a cart before the horse thing, when these probably should wait until you bring us the budget in terms of what you're thinking. However, I'm going to go ahead and comment on them because I know you're going to deal with them. One is what Mr. Barta was just referring to, and it's the parking lot. It is item D4. It's at the end of the agenda. I have a little different take on that, rather than seeing that as a place where we ought to put money, because it's a place that's actually made out of fill, and it may be an engineering nightmare, because once you try to seal that and then it sinks and then more and more, to me it looks like a money pit. But to throw money, and I mean literally to throw money, whether it's $500,000 or the $2 million, on that parking lot, rather than for you to only use $250,000 a year, which won't let us even maintain where we are now. So to spend money at the Rock, or to cut money out of A2, which is the impact fees, to have less money to use for paving is, in my opinion, very irresponsible. All the money that you're talking about needs to go to D3, to our paving plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Betty. Barry, good evening. Welcome.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council and staff. Barry Brandon, Morro Bay. I'd like to reiterate what Noah said about the workshops we've just had. For those who were not able to attend and are just seeing this a little bit for the first time tonight on television, we had a wonderful workshop, the first one on Monday evening. I counted almost 100 people. This afternoon we had, my guess was right around 40 people. Now, probably half of all those people were new faces, people who were basically just realizing the enormity of what we're trying to accomplish as far as not just fix the old plant, but to make a plant that we can live with for the next generation or two. So I want to say that what I really appreciate was the openness, the interaction between the staff, and I feel that the consultant that we've been able to hire is bringing us a level of professionalism that's truly remarkable. And if you read their bios, you'll see it. So looking forward to some really good results out of this program, and I want to thank all you staff and the City Council all came. I saw them, I think, every meeting. So they've really spent their time, too, so it's much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, Barry. Thanks especially for the positiveness. Good evening. Step right up. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. AGP, can we get a hand with the overhead, please?
Perhaps.
Oh, Joe's handling it. There you go.
Hi, good evening. I'm Gerald Bednors. I'm from the Beach House Bistro, North Morro Bay. Here to talk for a few minutes with you about a great event we have coming up July 4th. It's Monday, July 4th, from 12 to 4. 12 to 4 on the 4th. It's our fourth annual drive-through barbecue benefiting the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation. For $13, it's a great deal. You get Oak Pit Barbecue tri-tip, chicken, or a combination of, beans, salad, brownie, and a soda. It's really wonderful. You're able to drive right in off of Main Street, pull through the parking lot of the Beach House, and pull out on Alder. You don't even need to get out of the car. It's a great event to come to after the parade in Cayucas, and it's a great event to take part in before the wonderful fireworks here in Morro Bay. It's from 12 to 4 at the Beach House Bistro, which is 2770 Main Street, 771-9705. And it's not often that you actually hear somebody say 100% of the proceeds that day go to Susan G. Komen. My wife, Liz, is participating in the three-day breast cancer walk this year. This is her 14th year of walking. In the 14 years she's been walking, she's raised over $150,000 alone herself. Last year she raised $18,000, so our goal this year is to try and raise $20,000. So anything anybody can do to help, we'd love to see you there Monday, July 4th from 12 to 4 at the Beach House Bistro, 2770 Main Street, 771-9705. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jill. Thanks for coming down. Who would like to go next? Hi, Susan. Welcome.
Hi, Susan Stewart, Morro Bay Community Promotions Committee. I just wanted to give you a quickie update. Some of you already know we had our joint meeting with TBID, with the new advertising agency. Great attendance from the public. Saw much of the, maybe all of the council there and staff as well. We've had some very productive subcommittee meetings. I know Creative met. I wasn't there for that committee, but they're working on revamping the logo, working on the website, redesigning some of the ad campaigns along the lines of what was presented in their RFP, but tightening things up. I wanted to say also BCA has already done a press release for whale watching. She had a nice lunch at one of George's restaurants and noticed the whale watching boat going out. She said, I didn't know the whales were out in June. Got on the horn right away to the newspaper. We were on the front page above the fold, which is the place to be if you ask your kids who've been in journalism. On the Tribune, I think it was on a Thursday, the 23rd, all about go to Morro Bay and do whale watching. That's the kind of local advertising, but also stuff that our visitors pick up that we want to see. They also made sure there was TV coverage of the Morro Bay police.
Great news. Who would like to go next? Hi, Gary. Welcome.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council, and the worker bees of Morro Bay. I got some photos to show. Can someone,
let's see. Can we get AGP back, please?
Nope. Anyway, it doesn't show up too well. I just had to show a picture of the dogs on our canine, raising money for the canine, and super job. I mean, I couldn't believe the people that turned out. It shows you the support we're getting from the police department. There must have been, over 200 dogs. And if we could get that a little bit better. But anyway, this is at the curve. And far as you can see, clear to the rock are dogs. And we walked up through Main Street and over to, I forgot the name of the other street, down Barcadero and back, 3 mile walk, and it was super. Now the other point I want to say, you know, we really got a treasure here in Morro Bay, and with a lot of culture that I was surprised. My grandson's been here for 2 months, and he's from the Valley, and he's been in live theater, And my other kids come here every Sunday, or every summer, excuse me, and they like to go to Karen's place there on Main Street. And so my son was there for every week, two or three days a week, practicing for this play, the Aladdin, there in SLO. And I didn't think, you know, it was all right, till we went to the play this last weekend, and I couldn't believe what Karen had put together. And I have a couple of pictures here. This is, here's one picture. And the place was full. It was at there on the Cal Poly University. And here's a couple close-ups. And I couldn't believe the costumes and so forth. So here's another one. And the main reason why I'm up here is there were two-year-olds all the way up to teenagers. And I couldn't believe what Karen had put together. It was just dynamite. I encourage anybody in Morro Bay watching this on TV land that you have young kids, is go to Karen's and sign up, because it's quite an experience. And if you haven't met Karen, she is something else. She's a wonderful lady. She's doing a fantastic job for our lovely town. And one person got up from L.A. and said that she's been doing this for 30 years. And she was so inspired by her when she was there at 8 years old. She has her own business now in L.A. So anyway, I can't say enough what Karen has done for our community and teaching our young kids about the live theater. Thank you.
Thanks, Gary. Anyone else? Anybody? Going once? Going twice? I'll bring it back to council. Thank you all for your comments, Craig and John, Barta, Betty, and Barry, and Gerald, Susan Stewart, and Gary there at the end. You know, all my kids went through Karen, and I think it was 93 or so, we gave her a certificate, as we did with it in that era with a lot of the people that are focused on our kids here, and she was certainly one of them. I remember that. She is a treasure. And comments from anybody else? Nancy? George? Comments? Okay, then we're at the consent agenda. Would anybody like to pull any items? I'll start with Noah.
A2.
George? Nancy?
Did Noah pull A2?
He did.
Okay.
Carla? Could I hear a motion, please, approving items A1 and item A1?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. There you go, Craig. Noah, A2.
Yes, I actually was pulling because I plan on voting no. I think that there are things that we can do that would support very simple low-impact development concepts as part of the give that we're giving with the impact fee reduction. I think it lacks a public benefit component that really clearly shows resource improvements on conservation and so on. So I just wanted to pull it to vote no, but I respect Ms. Johnson's interest in making comments as well.
Okay. Thank you, Noah. And did you have anything to add?
Yes. I was going to pull it for the final be it further resolved. I had a question that I asked Kathleen today, and she's not here, but Rob said he could answer it. That last paragraph reads, be it further resolved by City Council of the City of Morro.
Looking for language to make that allowance.
Yeah, I read this resolution as not including that. If there's a residential component to that, then impact fees would apply. If you want to change that, and if it's a mixed use, that it would also not, then it would be eligible, then we need to clarify that. But my understanding was is if it has a residential component to it, that we were going to charge impact fees. That's the way this is currently read, that I read it.
And I think our original purpose was the opposite of that, so that, say, someone is enlarging their store or building a new store, they could have a residence above as long as it's retail below. So what, Mr. City Attorney, do we need to do next if that's a problem?
On a mixed-use area, would the residential component receiving...
Yes, can I clear this up? We're looking for specific language. We want to include a mixed-use project, which would include residential, but as long as it includes commercial, that makes it a mixed-use project. We want to include that in this resolution. And what Ms. Johnson is looking for is language to make that work.
My question on that would be my understanding that currently, currently the commercial component is qualifying for the waiver of impact fees. The residential component is not. Is that correct for what we're currently looking at?
Right. Sure. You could, and that's what my understanding is that where you want to head? You want to head if a mixed-use project came in, the way it's currently read is that it would not, and the entire project would be charged. Do you still want to charge impact fees for the component that's residential, or do you want the mixed-use project to be completely exempt also, both residential and commercial?
Well, I believe, and I think it was the purpose of the majority of us, I can't speak for the rest of the board up here, but I believe that we wanted the mixed-use element to be part of this, so that, you know, especially as long as the major part of the building is commercial with residential
as
an amenity.
In that scenario, would the entire project be exempt from?
Yes.
My suggestion, and we'll see if this satisfies that, City Council Morro Bay, that only commercial or mixed use projects on commercially zoned land be eligible, and residential projects within mixed-use areas are not eligible. So as long as they're mixed projects, it would be eligible.
Yeah. Perfect.
I think
that's
perfect.
I think that's what she's looking for. I'll let you argue this in a sec. But this is what she was trying to achieve.
Yeah, that was our purpose.
Am I on that?
Right.
Okay, and when you say commercial zone, that includes MSR?
Yes.
Perfect. Noah.
Okay, so the concern that raises is we are very general with that language, so you could feasibly see a project that has a very small component of commercial trying to satisfy the need just to qualify and is a majority residential, and I don't think that's the intent here. So I would request that you clarify that so we are guaranteed that the project is remaining majority, as you said, commercial to qualify.
I'll defer that question to Mr. Livick, but as I remember, we have regulations that require percentages of commercial versus residential, right?
That's correct, and the MCR requires a certain portion if it be to qualify.
Yeah.
My response would be we've seen just recently in a project on North Main what happened with those percentages, and my question would be, would that project, the Morro Mist project, have qualified?
The Morro Mist project has zero commercial in it, so it would not qualify.
So the language in there that alluded to some commercial components wouldn't qualify then?
It would have to be a mixed-use project with my suggested language, not a residential project.
So the council wouldn't be concerned about a 5%, 10% component of commercial then qualifying for this?
I believe, and I could be wrong, but back into my history with Planning Commission, it was 75% commercial, 25% residential. But again, I'll ask Mr. Livick or Mr. Schultz.
What occurs in those situations, though, if you recall, is with density bonuses and other affordable housing options that you have, that you're able to take those exemptions under state law, and that's what happened on the Main Street project. So it is possible that it can go below the 25% in some of these. So, that's up to you on whether you're all right with if it was a 10 or 15%, whether that would be also applied to this. But the way it's worded that Rob has suggested is if there's any commercial
or another reading.
What is your point of order, Betty?
Is whether you should bring this back another night or give us a chance for another public comment to comment on how you're changing this document, because we did not know you were going to include residential with this.
Thank you for your comment.
It's a question.
Thank you. Well, I said thank you for your comment. We change language all the time in resolutions, and
I'm absolutely fine with the way we're operating here.
I believe that was our intent in the first place. It just needed to be clarified in this language.
So then I would look for a motion. Do you want to go ahead? A motion approving resolution number 45-11 with the amendment of adding the word or mixed-use projects in the second further resolved.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion. Noah.
Yes, I'm going to be voting no, mostly because I think we need to, when we give away this large of a public give, we need to hold them to a higher standard of developments, low-impact development standards, conservation standards, to guarantee in an impact fee scenario that we're not creating a structure that's going to be creating a burden on our community in the long term.
Okay. Anything else? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 4-1. We're early. Okay, we'll start back up at 7 o'clock sharp with public hearings. Here we go. B1, Mr. Woods.
B1, Mr. Woods.
Thank you, and good evening, Mayor. And Council, on May the 10th, 2011, Council met at the regular meeting. You approved Resolution 3211, adopting the engineer's report describing the maintenance to be completed at the park, Cloisters Park and open space, and declaring the city's intent to levy the annual assessment to finance this maintenance. Per Council's direction, staff, Director Livick, and I met with a couple of Cloisters residents, Don Beattie and Carol DeNofo, discuss concerns over the maintenance of the Cloisters Parkways, the district, specifically the parkways. Staff has developed a new parkway design with the help of our commissioner, Recreation Parks Commissioner John Bates, and some other local landscape professionals in the community. And we, staff pitched the new parkway design at this meeting, and we all agreed that we would proceed with this new design and some demonstration parkways. The demonstration parkways were completed, and they were completed June the 17th, 2011. On June the 21st, Tuesday, a small group of residents and myself met at the site to discuss the redesign of the selected parkways. And also on the next day, Wednesday, June the 22nd, staff met with a subcommittee of the City Tree Committee, and we were to review and evaluate the proposed parkways as well. Both groups, the subcommittee from the tree committee as well as the residents, both endorsed the new proposed parkway design and the plant selection to be used. And I brought some pictures of the parkways. You can tell this is, and I also passed them out for council's review. This is an indigo circle. These are small parkways that are in front of the empty lots, and the redesign basically is consists of removing the old vegetation, except for the trees, replacing the drip line, and installing bark mulch. The demonstration parkways, we installed gorilla hair, and through our public meeting out there, if you can call a public meeting, our gathering, gorilla hair was voted down 100%. So we've changed our design to include bark mulch. It'll be very similar bark mulch that's down at Centennial Parkway. It's a small-sized mulch that will hopefully lock together as plants grow and stay intact and avoid being blown away by the wind. Each of the 120 homeowners at the Cloisters subdivision will be asked if they would like their parkway redesigned. And the redesigns, as we said, they're there now. And you can see some of the other parkways that are not changed, and the contrast of just a real basic design with local grasses and bark mulch to eliminate the weeds. If the property owner is satisfied with their current condition of the parkway, staff will continue to maintain it at the current level. If they choose to the redesign, we have a couple of options for them. And what we will be doing is connecting with the residents to get all the redesigned parkways will be outsourced as one project. However, it will be implemented in stages to facilitate proper and accurate coordination with each property owner. The parkways redesign project will begin immediately with project scoping and the bid package development and the property owner's collaboration. The administrative section of this project is estimated to take between 4 and 6 weeks. Once the contract is in place, the installation of the parkway design redesigns will be performed in sections to facilitate contractors' mobilization costs as well as the proper communication with each property owner. The implementation of this construction phase is estimated to take between 2 and 4 months, depending on the weather and available resources. Additionally, staff has begun sending informational notices to subscribing residents via the city website using the Notify Me module. Staff has sent 2 news flashes out just recently regarding the before-mentioned meetings, and we will continue to use our website to inform the subscribing Cloisters residents of future planned activities. Staff's intent is to continue improving the maintenance and the communication within the Cloisters Assessment District and adjusting our priorities and using the city's website Notify Me module as well as the mail. Tonight, June 28, 2011, is a hearing date for the proposed levy of the assessment. Staff has noticed all property owners on record via first-class mail of the hearing and published the notice in local newspapers. Staff has received 4 letters of protest regarding this matter. Staff is recommending Council's adoption of Resolution 4311. Thank you. That concludes my report.
Questions for Joe before we open it up? Noah?
No questions.
George? Nancy? Carla? This is your opportunity to address us. Step right up to the mic. State your name for the record. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council. My name is Robert Bacon, and I'm a resident of the Cloisters area. This is the third time I've been at a council meeting. I was here last year on the 28th, I think, in fact, it was, and I was the only person who spoke. Last year, I brought you a bunch of pictures, and I showed you how terrible the maintenance was in our parkway area and also in the park area. And then last month, I brought you pictures of, guess what, the exact same areas, and I showed you how they look exactly the same this year, a year later. And not that they weren't cleaned, because Mr. Wood took very good care of cleaning them up and making them look good in the parkway areas and the entrance to the park after I was here in July of 2010. But after that initial work, nothing more was done. During the time that I talked to Mr. Wood about getting things done, he kept mentioning to him different areas that needed to be attended to. I sometimes got things done, other times nothing was done. I don't have any objection whatsoever to paying the assessment. I frankly think it's a privilege to be able to live next to a great park like we have at the Cloisters. And the fact that we're providing some help towards the cost of it so the other people of the community can enjoy it. And by the way, we get a lot of visitors at Cloisters Park who take a walk or they ride their bikes. It's a really good tourist attraction, and it's a tourist attraction that is looking like the devil lately. In 2007, when I had visitors here, I was proud to take them through the park and show them. And I'd say to them, look at the job the city does of maintenance of this place. I wouldn't take them there today because it looks just terrible in most of the areas, with weeds still everywhere in the park, the barbed wire on the fences is all disconnected. Luckily, we get really good response on the graffiti. Now, I know that there are budget problems. Every city has those problems. I know that Mr. Wood has been working with a lesser staff than what has been the case, but we're getting a lot of promises now from him. What he's proposed and what has been suggested, making the change to the bark as an example, shows there's progress. But I want to make sure that all these promises that are being made are kept. I think one other thing that could be done, I realize I've got to...
Yeah, it's out of time. Out of time. Mr. Bacon.
I have, in fact, met Parks and Rec, but it was before Joe Woods, and the results weren't favorable, which is why I think people have not paid a lot of attention to this over the last few years. Many close-door homeowners and I believe Joe Woods has been very responsive to our needs, and we have a good handle on what we can expect, at least as far as our parkways go. He has shown a willingness to hear out our issues and address them in smart ways. For instance, removing the real hair, bringing the tree committee in on the design. Actually, redesigning them in the first place was the best example. He has also opened up his department's financial records for us to see, so we have an increased knowledge of where and how our dollars are being spent. The major plus, as far as I'm concerned, though, is the opening of communication channels, the Snowify Meet that Joe mentioned. This was Rob Liffick's idea, which Parks and Rec has implemented, I think, beautifully. So these are all wonderful things that have occurred over the period of 1 month. None of data really to make a decision off of. However, many close-door homeowners will support this year's levy, but we're taking a probationary approach. So, you know, we'll agree to it this year, but next year, you know, we'll have to wait and see. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Ms. Betty. Thanks for coming down tonight. Anyone else? Anybody? No? Then I'll bring it back to council. I'll start down with Carla.
Well, I'd like to thank the speakers who came tonight and Mr. Woods and everyone else who's been involved. I actually walk out in the cloisters and do enjoy your fine neighborhood. Thank you. And I've seen the improvements. I actually ran into Mr. Woods when I was out there walking today, and it is definitely looking good. It's a change in the right direction, and I think it takes time to do it right. And I hope that everybody out there is just patient with it.
Nancy?
I would echo what Ms. Borchardt just said and agree that I think the Recreation and Parks Department is doing a wonderful job of communicating with people and doing the very, very best that we can possibly do out there with limited funding. So thank you, Mr. Woods, for your efforts, and thank you for coming to talk to us tonight. We appreciate that.
George?
Yeah, I too agree that it looks like we're going to go in the right direction here, and it's going to take a little while. And I think they just show patience out there. I think Mr. Woodrick is going to get this job done. And when you come back next year, we hope you will be really happy. And thank you for coming down.
Noah?
Yeah, thank you. I was able to attend the subcommittee meeting with the tree committee, as well as observe the meeting with the neighborhood, and I was impressed. I could tell that there was strong communication, and Mr. Woods and his staff has been able to really make a link with the neighborhood that I think will help us as we go forward, identifying future needs and hopefully not letting components start to slip away from us as was in the past. So this has been a really good month for that development, and obviously performance is going to be key for the neighborhood to feel satisfied. And I think it would be exciting as we go forward to start to identify the long-range management plans as well, so we can see other areas of the park improve as well, including the hardscape. So those are my comments.
Joe, did I hear you correctly that in 4 months all the parkways will be done?
What I had mentioned in my report was that the timeline to establish the contract and get it out to bid and get a package together would be about 4 to 6 weeks. And then from construction time, I'm estimating 2 to 4 months of completion. And that is conditional upon weather and available resources. We're planning to attack the parkways in sections, and we're doing so, like I said, for mobilization purposes, there'll be at least 2,000 squares per section, but we'll have to coordinate with that with each homeowner. And if the homeowner is not available or not responsive, I think due diligence to get them on board is important, and it may take a little bit more time. But I think it's very important to have their input. There is a little bit of selection, not much, but it's certainly worth going out and soliciting each homeowner prior to starting. So as each section comes up, we'll leapfrog ahead, identify section. The second section is going to be done. We'll notify those residents that their time is up and do they have all their paperwork in, and then we would continue. So I would say the construction is definitely
this time. With no guarantees on next year. I will share, I'm not crazy about just seeing bark and grass out there everywhere, but, you know, if you guys are happy with it and you've talked with the Cloisters and they're happy with it, you know, there's no mention of plants, you know, I mean, beyond grass, juniper or flowers or anything. That's my opinion. I don't live there. If you guys do, and if you like it, great. So I guess that's the end of my comments, that you know we're going to be watching. And there's going to be no slack from this mayor in April. None. Okay. Well, somebody want to make the motion?
Move approval, B1.
Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion carries 5-0. B2, Mr. Woods.
Good evening. Good evening, Mayor and Council. On May the 10th, Council met and adopted Resolution 3211, approving the engineer's report describing the annual maintenance for the completion of the North Point natural area and declaring the city's intent to levy the assessment to finance that maintenance. By adopting Resolution 4411, $5,645 will be collected through the assessment of all parcel owners at North Point Subdivision for the maintenance of the North Point natural area. Tonight, June 28, 2011, is the hearing date for the proposed levy of the assessment. Staff noticed all property owners of record via first-class mail and of the hearing, as well as published the notice in the local newspapers. We've received no protests on this matter. Therefore, staff recommends council adopt Resolution 4411. That concludes my report.
Questions for Joe? I'll start with you this time. Nancy, George, Noah. Would anybody like to speak to us on this item? This is the appropriate time. Anyone? I'll bring it back to council, and I'll start with you, Noah. George, over here. I hear a motion.
Move approval of B2.
Second. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. B3, Mr. Livick.
Thank you. This is our 2010 Urban Water Management Plan, and Mr. Dylan Wade will be making our staff presentation on this item. Thank you.
Good evening, Dylan.
Good evening. I'll try to be very brief. First and foremost, I had a correction. A member of the public pointed out to us on page 2-4, that in the document it previously read, the Morro Bay area experienced relatively high annual population growth of 7.1% between 1990 and 2000. That was incorrect. It was 7.1% for the total period. Annual growth rate was about 0.68. So that has been corrected in the document and now reads, the Morro Bay area experienced population growth of 7.1% between 1990 and 2000. So that's an errata that I wanted to slip in there before I got rolling. I'll keep this very brief. I'm trying to condense about 250 pages of technical information into 9 slides that we'll cover very quickly. Let's So the urban water management plan is a requirement that all water purveyors that provide water to more than 3,000 customers or more than 3,000 acre feet each year have to prepare this plan every 5 years. Recently, in 2009, the state also passed Senate Bill 7X7, which was a special assembly session that required implementation of the state's goal to reduce water usage by 20%. So it set mandatory targets to reduce water usage throughout the state of California 20% by the year 2020. And then water purveyors were required as part of the urban water management plan to include those reductions in their plan. So the state basically mandated, thou shalt cut water usage by 20% and show that reduction in your plan. So this plan has been changed to reflect those state requirements. But what that does do is it reduces the utility of the plan for our own internal planning purposes. And I just wanted to throw that caveat out there. These are the sections and the things I'm required to cover in the public hearing tonight. That there's a water implementation plan. So basically plan, how are we going to reduce our water usage to meet the targets? We're required to talk about the economic impacts of reducing our water usage, which, as you well know, reduced water usage means reduced revenues for the Water Enterprise Fund. We're required to talk about the method used to set the target. We use method 3. We're required to talk about our water use targets, and I'll cover that later. We're required to have a draft water shortage contingency plan. We'll cover that later. And then we're also required to review the demand management measures. So let me run through those requirements very briefly. And the way that I'll do this is the plan is broken into 7 sections. So the state went through a process and basically decided how much water each area or each region should use on a per capita basis. That per capita basis, so they've basically divided our water usage into the population here. That methodology kind of penalizes places like Morro Bay that are tourist-driven. We roll all that transient population into our population base, and that artificially inflates how much water usage we show. But our target for 2015 is 119 gallons per capita. In 2020, we need to hit 113. The baseline 10-year average, so over the last 10 years, over the base period, we averaged 125 gallons per capita daily. Last year, our water demands were below the 2020 target. We actually had used about 106 gallons per person last year. So if we can keep our demands down, if we have a wet year, then we'll meet our targets without doing anything. The other way that you can meet the targets, though, is I wanted to highlight that water demands do fluctuate significantly from year to year. And then projected demands in 2035 are 1,521 acre feet. Last year we used about 1,250. On average we use about 1,400 acre feet. So here's a chart showing historic water usage. Here's the 1,521 mark and 2,035 that we'll reach. And then here's where we've been. We've kind of jumped around. This is our population over time, over that same use. Section 4 is really where we get into the meat of it. We talk about our sources of water. We have the state water project. We have the 2 groundwater basins. We also have the desalination plant. I'm very comfortable to state that there's no agency our size that has such a complex water portfolio. We've got kind of a lot of sources available to us, and we've done a lot of work in that regard. New sources potentially available to us would be the wastewater treatment plant upgrade. For the purpose of this document, we did not include the 400 acre feet of projected wastewater treatment reclamation. We just didn't think that we think we'll have a much better handle on that in 2015. So we left it out of this document for planning purposes, but it is out there. And then also exchanges and emergency agreements would increase our reliability. So here's the water shortage contingency plan. We have different stages of shortage, and then what we've done is we've tied those stages of shortage, which is a requirement of the state, to our local code that was adopted some time ago that outlines what steps water shortages would occur at. So we've basically tied those two requirements together through this plan. But the key thing to remember is that available water supplies should be sufficient to meet demands now into the future. Section 6, we talk about demand management measures. And there's 14 mandatory demand management measures that the state requires us either to adopt, plan to adopt, or show how they're not locally cost effective. And in Morro Bay, we've implemented all the demand management measures that are locally cost effective. There are other water conservation technologies and tools that we're using that aren't reflected in those 14. For example, we have a water audit with the energy partners that they'll come to your business and do an energy audit, and as part of that, they'll retrofit your facility for water usage. That's not included in these demand management measures. I think in later this fall, I'd like to request coming back to council and talking more specifically about water conservation. There's some specific things. Our toilet retrofit program that probably needs to be updated with the plumbing code changes that have just occurred and go into effect on July 1st. And then there's other water-saving sort of strategies that we can talk about. So I would propose that we do that in the future and outside of the scope of this document. And then I wanted to show what was implemented and when we implemented these. The City of Morro Bay has been fairly aggressive at water conservation. There was a period of time where we were the most conserving community in the state. We've lost that title to a couple of communities in the Santa Cruz Mountains, but we're on average and per capita, real terms, water use, Morro Bay is a very efficient user of water. And we implemented a lot of these strategies very early on. And that concludes my presentation, and I turn it back to the council.
Thank you. That was a succinct report, and we're grateful for that, and thorough. Carla?
No questions at this time. I'll wait till after public comment.
Nancy?
I had just one. In your staff report, under discussion, I hope I'm reading this wrong, but the final sentence says, while DWR never accepted the city's plan as being complete, the 2005 plan became the basis for the 2010 plan. So does that mean we're basing this plan on a plan that wasn't accepted as complete the first time?
Largely, yes. Although this plan, we've adopted the format that the DWR wants to see. So we've been much more careful in this plan to make sure that we meet the reviewing format that they'll use. So we made the executive decision. We submitted the 2005 plan in 2006, I believe it was January, and we didn't receive comments until I think it was October of 2008. So in late 2010, we struggled with, do we try to update the 2005 plan, or do we just take that effort and roll it into the 2010 plan? I made the decision that we would just update the 2010 plan and forget about the 2005. We could have gotten there, but we didn't take that effort. Instead, we focused it on getting this completed.
Thank you.
George, any questions? No? Okay. If anyone would like to address council, this is the appropriate time. Any of you? John?
Once again, good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. I'm here to talk about my shore usage. We're truly pioneers in that regard. And the little town up in the Santa Cruz Mountains, it gets a ton of rain up there, and they don't have lawns, and they beat us out by a little bit. But the bottom line is we're doing a great job on all those fronts. There's a small minority within our community that are undoubtedly still unhappy that we have a clean and reliable water supply. They fought at every turn against our having this supply, all while preaching fear. We may even hear from some of them tonight. But what I'd like to stress is this should be celebrated, this report. We had a water management plan 15 years ago. That's far before the state started even asking for these things. We had one, and we were doing all this conservation and all these other things. We have come a long way, folks, and we have done a great job. And the most important slide you saw up there is we have adequate supplies for now and into the future. And that's all. We should all be taking a big thank you for that, and we should all be happily drinking our water. And good luck with this. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Anyone else? Betty?
My name is Betty Winholtz. I do want to speak to this plan. My intent is to ask that you continue it because there are a number of errors that need to be corrected. And the noticing that went to the public, I believe, was insufficient, so therefore there's hardly anyone here to speak to it this evening. I also took note of the fact that the Department of Water Resources never accepted our previous plan, and that was interesting news for me to read, having been on the council for the past 8 years. We were never told that, so I find that interesting. I particularly want to you to notice item number 55 that says, encourage the active involvement of the population prior to and during the preparation of this plan. I've never been noticed during the preparation of this plan, and when it did mention in the document that notice went out through the water bills, as a renter, I do not get a water bill. 47% of your community are renters and do not get water bills, which means half of your town was not noticed, and therefore you have not fulfilled this requirement that's part of this plan. This plan, in contrast to the previous one, the parking plan, which I think was the epitome of an ideal how to write a plan, this one's kind of on the other side of that because of the errors. Let me name some of those, and these are for the record. The first one I just mentioned was public involvement. The next one has to do with, is on page 2-1. It talks about the expansion of our community has been limited by a hillside. That's not true. It's been limited by the will of the people, that we will not expand unless it goes to the people to say so. On page 2-3, it talks about that we're trying to build a viable industrial base, and in my 8 years, I do not see that we had ever made that attempt. On page 2-4, it talks about new development of affordable multifamily housing units may potentially be implemented. I do not see this council nor the previous council having ever tried to do that. The next one is on page 2-4, and to me this is the most critical one after the noticing, and that is that you have extrapolated that our population is at 10,608, when if you go to the census website, our population is 10,234. Our population has actually decreased, and you're trying to promote it as having increased. Now, the document says the reason for that is because the census data wasn't out when they were preparing this report. And yet this information was in the Tribune over 2 months ago. So to not have accurate data in here when the census report out, I think, is erroneous and misleading. Number 7 has to do with Measure F, that it was passed, quote, in 1984 to limit new construction. That's not true. It was passed because we had a water issue. Number 8, climate. It says on page 2-9 that our weather was hot and dry.
Thank you,
and
Betty.
It also shows that the average never went over 70 degrees.
Thank you,
so
Betty.
For these reasons and others, I'm asking you to continue this item
Thank
and let
you,
the
Betty.
Public have access.
Thank you, Betty. Anyone else? Anybody? Okay. Bring it back to council. Start with you, Noah.
Yeah, thank you. My first question, I already spoke with Mr. Wade about it, is there's a chart on 512 regarding inconsistency of supply, and something that I thought should be pointed out in there along that chart is that we do have the potential of emergency interruptions that does need to be recognized as part of our planning, and Mr. Wade agreed that could be added. So I'd appreciate it if it was. It's an important thing to realize. The State Water Project is supplying us for the most part year-round. We do have our plans interruption for maintenance, but we do have the potential in a earthquake-prone state.
That clarification.
No problem. I was very happy to hear about us returning with some more conservation discussion in fall, so that satisfied me there. And I would like to hear Mr. Wade's comments, I guess, on some of the public comments as far as the census information and so on, whether we should update that.
Thank you for asking. The census information, the 10,234, was posted as tentative. They haven't finalized that data as of the writing of this report. The 10,608 is from the Department of Finance. So the areas where we could take these population projections were specified to us in the guidebook to prepare the urban water management plan, and it states specifically go to the census first. If they don't have great data there, then you can go to the Department of Finance projections, which is what we did.
Yeah, another question for Mr. Wade is you referred to the reclamation plan. It is in the document. It's not developed very intensely because we still have a lot of details to be developed about the potential reclamation portfolio and plan. One of my questions, though, and it was mentioned in some of the laws that you cited in the report, it has to do with salinity requirements and objectives. I was wondering, is that also what you're thinking will start to be peeled into as we get further into reclamation?
Yeah, I mean, a little off topic. I think we can have a great discussion about that, and we will as we move forward on the wastewater treatment plant. Certainly, the rules and regulations regarding to salt and nutrient management of the groundwater basins are going to have a significant impact on our potential ability to reclaim water and will define in large terms, at least in my belief, what we will and won't be able to do with that water. So, correct. That's one. And then also just the timeline of the plant project. We didn't feel it was appropriate to sort of be very aggressive at assuming we would have that resource available to us before the next writing of this report.
So that strikes me as a very much a long-term process, which would take a lot of coordination between the community and the exterior of our neighbors and so on. Without really drawing that out in this document, we're not locking ourselves out of actually starting that discussion in the near term if we would like to do so?
Correct.
Okay, great. Thank you.
George? Nancy? Carla?
Thank you. Yes, I have a question on 322. There's a paragraph in there that talks about in order to continue investing in water conservation programs and to remedy the impact to reduce water sales on revenues, the city may need to apply adjustment billing factor in the near future. So I guess the question is, does that mean that you're talking about a potential rate increase based on that?
That's correct. As you conserve water, it has an impact on rates. So currently our budget this year will be relying on saved reserves to make up some shortfalls between our operating budget and our revenues. Same thing in 2010 that did occur. So that we'll have a projected shortfall in our revenues in 2010. And I think 2010 was a particularly rough year in terms of water purveyors. I think everybody in the region was down 10 to 15% on the revenues. We had mandatory conservation in place during that period, as well as the wet winter, as well as the economic downturn. That sort of a combination of factors has impacted us. And if that trend continues, then we will have to raise rates.
And any idea of what type of what amount we would be talking about? In an estimate?
No, it will be fairly, I guess, that would be subject to discussion. Of course, I don't want to pre-presume what the council would or would not do, and then also what the public would or would not accept. It would be, I would say, in the order of 10 to 15%.
Oh, okay. You answered my question.
That's the double-edged sword of water conservation, is the less we sell, the less income to the city, and we've got to cover the bills. So clearly we're on the side of the residents, keeping all your bills as low as possible. But it does have a negative impact on the city. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, if I could. Water rate in Morro Bay hasn't changed since 1995. So inflation is catching up with us, too. It's not just conservation. I don't want to overplay that hand. I don't want to be dramatic about it. It's inflation also is catching up with us.
Okay. To feed back to you, Noah, I'm comfortable with the state water thing. I know that you have a concern about the earthquake concept. There's many, many acts of God things that can happen to this town, to our infrastructure, to all different kinds of things. And if we started putting that into every report, we would get bogged down. Because then we start recognizing risks in everything we look at, and that would be a never-ending cycle for us. And we haven't started down that road, and you want to start down that road. And our staff has spent hundreds of hours, you know, putting this excellent water management plan together, and I am satisfied with it. But that said, if I'm overruled, I'm cool with that, you know.
I'm simply suggesting including in that chart recognition that there could be an emergency interruption as part of our water management plan. it doesn't speak to getting into the weeds about every little problem that we might encounter, but that seems to me large enough that we would want to include it. And it's a very simple inclusion that would actually allow me to vote for this document. Without that, I won't vote for it, and I would expect we'd want a unanimous vote for a document as important as this.
Okay. I stand by my, but again, we'll just, George?
You had a motion.
We have a motion and a second.
I'll second your motion.
I'm sorry, the motion's already been seconded by Carla.
Oh, excuse me. I didn't understand.
But you are welcome to discuss and especially address Noah's concern. Nancy?
Well, in a way, I can understand Noah's concerns. We live in California. We have earthquakes. We have tsunamis. We have who knows what else that can happen. But I also appreciate your point of view, Mr. Mayor, where we talk about if we're to include that in every report we do on everything that happens. I feel quite confident that if there's an interruption in the, and I imagine it would be the state water system, that it would be dealt with quickly and efficiently. I don't think it needs to be part of this report.
Cool. I guess my question to Mr. Wade is, does it change the context of this one way or another, if that's included or not?
I'll stay out of this one. I don't think it has a significant impact. So, either way, I don't see it as being significant.
Anything else? Is everybody ready to vote? We don't need to do a paper vote on this, do we? Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Motion carries 4-1. Ah.
Making a molehill out of a mountain.
D1. Ms. Slayton.
Good evening, Mayor Yates and council members. I'll be brief. This item is before you tonight to add language to the general fund emergency reserves per established parameters. Staff felt that it was important for the council to protect the emergency reserve by programming the excess funds for one-time projects such as streets, vehicle replacement, or facility maintenance. This is predicated by an experience from another city who did not have their reserves programmed at all. They had much larger reserves than we do, but the employee groups were successful in negotiating raises based on the fact that the reserves were not programmed. So I felt that it was prudent to bring this forward to you. And that's it for me.
Okay, start with you.
I don't have any comments, so I'd move to approve this item.
Have anything to say? Well, let's see here if we see a second.
Second.
George, anything? Anything over here?
Yes, I have questions.
Okay.
Before you get to the motion. 2, 3, and 4 seem redundant in their verbiage. It's kind of repetitive down the line, and so I'm wondering if there's a purpose for, I mean, 4 is the same as 2 and 3. You're saying the same thing 3 times. Am I misunderstanding it? Because it seems very redundant to me.
When I took the reserve policy that was in place, I added line 3 just to say that, I use it to clarify again. I realize that it does pick up part of the language from number 2, that amounts greater than the target balance or minimum of 2,750 will be programmed and designated. So part of that does have a redundant component in it, just for clarity. Number 4, I just crossed out the part of use of the amount described in number 2. Reserves must be approved by the city council, and I just said use of reserves must be approved by the city council. There is some redundancy in it, but I wanted to make it very clear.
Well, number 3 says will be programmed or designated by council during the annual budget, and it says the same thing. That's why I'm bringing this up. It says, if the municipal code included a provision for the city manager to act in emergency Is that, were you able to look that up?
Yes, that's part of Chapter 2, has those provisions in there on emergencies and how that, how it's done. If the council majority is not available, then they can't access those funds.
Thank you for that.
Do you see any problem legally with the redundancies? It's just redundant.
No, I see the redundancy, but I don't see that there's any conflict between the two, so it's fine.
So, you know, what's your pleasure on this?
It's fine. It just seemed pointless to say the same thing three times, three different ways.
Okay. Any other comment on this then? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. D2, Noah.
Thank you. This is a report regarding the subcommittee that Ms. Borchardt and I are on and focusing on a volunteer community bus option that we've been working with the city manager on evaluating, and we'd like to report back, and that's what this report is. We took the time to visit the community of Cambria to the north and discuss their volunteer-driven community bus program that's run entirely by volunteers with one part-time staffer who works out of their home. And we met with the program coordinator, who happens to be a volunteer as well, to get details about what they've done and time frame and so on. That's included in this report. And we have on page 2, you'll see a summary of what is involved in Cambria as far as details of their operations. And then you see some next steps that we'd recommend the council considering and taking some further action or recommendations on. So just to highlight a couple things about the Cambria program, and then I'll turn it over to Ms. Borchardt. They started in 1980. The program's focused on seniors and disabled. It is pet-friendly. They have no fee. It's a door-to-door service Monday through Friday, 8 to 4:30, with a Tuesday visit weekly to San Luis Obispo and a monthly visit to Arroyo Grande. They don't operate on holidays. They have a call-in opportunity to schedule rides daily between 9 and 11 a.m. with a message option at any time beyond that. And same-day rides are allowed, but reserved rides receive the higher priority. And multiple stops are encouraged. They like to pick someone up and take them to many different places to help them accomplish their needs as they're out. The $42,000 annual budget to run the program is raised annually by volunteer donation, which is accomplished through a mail-in campaign. They do have, and it's tax deductible, they have about 35 volunteer drivers. Their volunteer coordinator, who estimates he works about 30 hours a month on the program, and he has a volunteer assistant. They take care of most of the driver training and coordination of the breakfast and recognition type programs. And they do have a contracted dispatcher who, I said, works out of their home at $700 a month. And that person takes care of most of the logistics of scheduling and setting up communications between the drivers. Their insurance package is about $7,000 a year. And that also allows for drivers to be cleared with their background check. The insurance company is able to do that, so they don't have to worry about that as well. It's a benefit of the insurance. And they have two buses, which were funded through grants mostly and endowments. The buses have less or equal to 9 seats, which allows a Class C license for the drivers, so they don't have to be specially certified. They do have the wheelchair option. They do maintenance and fuel with local stations, and they have the support of Ride-On for larger maintenance-type projects, and they store the buses at their CAL FIRE station. The other interesting thing is their coordinator, who's really a champion for this program and is one of the key reasons why it's been successful, he said he's very available to us for support and training if necessary. So I'll turn this over to Carla now to take us on to the next part of this.
Thank you, Mr. Smuckler. I think that most of the high points were addressed. If you see the schedule that we attached to this that was available, they've done a good job in covering all the shifts every day and making this really happen for over 20 years at a very affordable rate. I think when Mr. Smuckler and the city manager and I met, we kind of weren't real sure how this program would work, but after seeing the concept and the elements of it, we found this, even though there are other programs out in the community, San Luis has a program for the rural areas that we just had an opportunity to look at a little bit on the internet. This seems the most similar to what our needs would be in Morro Bay, and we're looking at it as an opportunity to...
How does call a ride, how does those contractors, how do they fit into this scheme?
Well, this is separate from that program. This would be to augment. We had two vehicles before. We had three vehicles before. We're down to one. We've seen a disruption in the services that are being able to be provided based on the funding. And so this is an element of how we tried to do the friendly ride program through the seniors. We weren't able to quite get that. It didn't quite get going forward, and I think it was through lack of a coordinator of it. And so we're stepping back and trying to use this program that has a proven track record at an affordable price at $40,000 a year, and certainly be able to provide a level of service back up to our community that we have not been able to provide the last few years now.
I'm certainly in favor of this. I asked the question because I'm concerned that the name of the contractor is escaping me. Help me out.
MVP.
Thank you very much. That, you know, they're at their minimum now, and they operate our trolleys. And I would, I don't want to see them say, you know, it's not worth our while and leave town, and then we don't have a contractor. That's where I'm coming from. So you have a response.
They don't have a contractor there, and they're a few thousand residents less in a more isolated area than we are, and have successfully run two buses to meet all their needs. When we visit the budget, I'm sure we'll look at the ridership and those things and the cost of what we're getting for that versus what we can do for a lot less money to provide some service that you know, it's to offset and augment what's currently existing.
So I'm not...
I guess at one point, you're right. It potentially could replace what we have.
Okay. And that would be the trolleys, too.
Well, I'm not comparing this to the trolley service, no.
But they operate the trolleys, and I don't think they would stay in town just to operate the trolleys.
Well, we're still waiting to get our regional... transit. Go ahead.
The regional transit plan.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. It's a concern. Nancy?
I especially like the door-to-door part of this for our seniors, because I've heard more than anything that that's what they're missing now with the new plan, with what we're currently offering. I'm just wondering what I know what door-to-door means in terms of picking me up at my house, but then you said something, Noah, about more than one place, like, will you take me to visit my friend and then to the doctor and to the store, and is this all scheduled ahead of time, or do you have any idea yet how, or is that, you know, too early a question?
Well, the coordinator said that they do like to encourage multiple stops, and the way that they address that so the driver can be responsive to the rider is they have cards. So when a rider's dropped off for their hair appointments, they have the call card, and as they're getting close to finishing their appointment, they're able to call to the driver, the volunteer driver, say, hey, I'm getting close to being done, can you come pick me up? At that point, the program encourages that rider, if they have additional errands that they need to be dropped off for within the time frame that they're going to be operating, to go ahead and do that, because what they recognize is that it takes some effort to get out of the home, and why not take advantage of that effort and take care of all of those needs while they're down in an area where the services exist. Something else that we both mentioned, but I think it's important to draw out, is this is not managed by a government agency. This is a community group basically taking the program with some government support and operating it and making sure that it remains in operation and has good standards. And that's what we would identify here. This is not something that we see the city operating. When you see in next steps for Morro Bay, potential city resources, we're thinking seed support that would really help get this program off and running. And what we're asking is that we identify potentially some options that the council would be willing to entertain. So as we go out and reach out to potential organizations that could take that lead role, we're able to let them know, hey, there's going to be some support to get this off the ground. You won't be going at this alone. These are some of the things that you could expect the city helping with as we get to the point where this program is self-sufficient.
That made me think of just one more question here. You up in the top talk about no holidays. Now, that does not include, for example, Sunday, because I notice you have church communities. It would seem to me this would be a really good service for older people to be able to get to church and back on Sunday. So that's not considered a holiday, is it?
Well, this does sound like a great idea, but I think you asked that you wanted the council to back you and to study this a little more. Is that what I understand?
So that Mr. Smuckler and myself can go out into the community as council members and seek out support from some of these organizations to see if we can take it to the next step.
Yes, well, because you are dealing with a lot of senior citizens here, and you got a time frame, like it says, 8 o'clock to 4:30, and I could see a senior citizen thinking, get mixed up and end up someplace after 4:30 and thinking they're supposed to be picked up or think they, you know how that works. And so I think you do have some things to work out, you know. But it sounds great. So if you can work out all the minor details, I think it's going to be a good project.
Are you looking for a motion on this or a recommendation or what?
I don't know that we need a motion, but they want direction, so we need a consensus so they can move on. We can certainly put it in the form of a motion. I don't think it's necessary, but let's see how complicated it gets before I answer that question.
I would just add, too, is that the focus of this program, as you were asking earlier about how does this affect the services we have now, and certainly it will have an impact yet to be recognized, but the focus of this program is strictly for seniors and disabled. And the call a ride is available to all members of the community. This is a limited segment of our community that we're focusing on that seem to be the most challenged with using that service level as it exists right now because they don't have access to get to the stops and things like that where this is door-to-door.
You know, obviously this is a good thing, and clearly I'm going to support this. I'm uneasy when I hear things like get a community group to come forward. It's like what I'm hearing is we're going to make this a grassroots effort, and it's not a grassroots effort if it's coming from here. It's, you're making it happen. Call it what it is. But that said, obviously it's a good thing if we can expand the service for seniors and vets and disabled. That's clearly a good thing. I'm not going to vote against that. And if you guys want to go out and make this effort, I think it's great. So I'll stand behind it. But there's my concerns. It's my concerns. George?
No, I just said, I mentioned already before, there is some concerns, but I think they can work it out. You know, if they're going to put a lot of effort into this, and that's just great. I think we should move ahead on this, whatever they like us to do here.
What do you want to do?
Yeah.
We're just, I guess, looking for your blessing to move forward.
You got it.
Okay.
So be it.
You got it.
Move ahead.
Anything else, Mr. Smuckler?
Should we talk at all about the menu options for one-time support, if there's anything that you want to just take off the table now? Or
I think that's been included, and until we can find organization or individuals that are willing to do that, there's no point in us addressing that funding.
Okay.
One last comment I'd like to make is if someone's listening to this and thinking they might be interested and would like some more details, that I'd invite them to contact either Councilmember Borchardt or myself so we could get together and talk more about the details of the program and
start to hash out the options.
Great. Okay, let's take five. We'll come back and finish up. George and Noah, please. D3, Mr. Livick.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council. Item D3 is discussion and perhaps adoption of the city's pavement management plan. This is the first time Public Services, or in the past Public Works, has brought a pavement management to you. At one point in time, we were using some pavement management software to and that $400 million asset that we have sitting on the ground out there. Like I said, we use a some software to model the city streets condition and to assign a PCI or a pavement condition index. And we can kind of view that like a 1 to 100 grading system, if you will. The city has about a little under 54 miles of city streets, and they're broken up into arterial, which are streets like Main Street, Morro Bay Boulevard, South Bay Boulevard are carry the most traffic. Collector streets, streets like Piney, Ironwood, Beachcomber, collect the local traffic. And then we break down to our local commercial and local residential streets, which make up the majority of our streets, being slightly over, for those local streets, slightly over 41 miles of city streets. And those streets are some of the worst condition streets. Overall, the city's pavement condition index is a 63. So if we're using it like a grading system, we're a solid D, is what we're looking at. Maybe a C minus, we could assess ourselves. Statewide, the goal for statewide is to maintain a pavement, average pavement index value of 70. So a C, a passing grade. That would be ideal if we could get to that level. That's what most cities strive for. In order to do that, it's going to take quite a bit of work to catch up from where we are. I think I've stated this probably to people's nausea, that the North Morro Bay streets were never constructed as streets. They kind of evolved over time. They were county dirt roads that were red rocked and then chip sealed on top of that. And then in the 80s, a overlay program overlaid that with a couple of inches of asphalt when the city was doing all of their own paving. And really, those North Morro Bay streets have performed great for what we've asked them to do with the little amount of original street construction. The South Morro Bay streets are a little bit better condition on average, mainly because of the underlying soils materials. In the south end of town, there's mostly sand that exists under the streets, and it's a more forgiving material. So what do we do? Ideally, we would like to improve the PCI, or the pavement condition index, to an average of 70 for all the city streets. We want to continually to regularly update the micropaver street condition database, and that should be done on a probably a five-year increment, reassess our pavement management plan, bring that pavement management plan back to council. Institute a regular global maintenance or street sealing program. Keeping the water out of the subgrade is one of the best things you can do to preserve those streets. Implement an effective pothole repair program. Implement a regular crack sealing program, so when the cracks start to happen, you drop in some basically tar-like substance, seals up those cracks, keep the water from getting in, and then have a comprehensive 10-year pavement maintenance and rehab program. We have various funding scenarios looked at in this study, all the way from, you know, the ideal, if the funds were available, for $900,000 a year, very aggressive pavement maintenance program. In 10 years, we estimate we could get our pavement condition back to a 70. If we were to spend $500,000 a year on our pavement resources, we would basically maintain the 63 pavement condition. Lesser amounts of funding, the streets will continue to deteriorate. Just need to point out that had comments from a couple of citizens on this report on page 28, where we talk about the budgetary impacts. It talks about it states the budget, which includes high-level expenditures for the first year, uses accumulated Measure Q funds during that first year to maximize on high-use streets. Following years would be funded, or what is known as a cape seal, over the rest of the street. So you do a heavy chip seal and then cover that up with another slurry. So it's not the chip seal of the old days, where you'd get that chip breaking loose and usually ended up in your windshield. This is a completely modern chip seal program where you don't have that aggregate loss at all. We estimate that would cost approximately $370,000 to do that section of Main Street. If we were looking at $500,000 for the first year, that would leave about $275,000 for the remaining streets, which would equate to about 2 miles of microsurfacing, or it's a lower level chip seal. An example of where we have used microsurfacing in the past is that section of Main Street that was completed with the bike lane project between Highway 41 and San Jacinto, where they came in and did a very heavy slurry with some sand aggregate in the mixture, seals up the street, and makes a new wearing surface and adds life to that street. With that, I conclude my presentation and be happy to talk more about pavement.
I'm sure you love talking about pavement. Carla.
Thank you. I know a lot of work went into this, and it took a while, and it's wonderful. Thank you, just for starters, very much to all of you who have done it. I'm a little confused because I don't know if streets are with you or streets are with Parks and Rec, because it seems to kind of bounce back and forth. But my question, I guess, right now is there any money? There is no money at this time budgeted in the general fund. I don't have it in front of me, but I recall that it was just Measure Q money we're using right now.
That's correct for these larger type projects. Our regular street budget pays for the two street personnel members, and then our kind of day-to-day patching operations that we do, the calls that we get on potholes, that's what that budget generally pays for, is the dead whatever in the street they go out to pick up. But they do an awful lot of cold patching during the year, and to try to keep up with all of the work order requests that we get.
So would the intent be then in future budgets you're going to include a percentage into the, your budget, your general fund budget, for part to offset this? Or are you going to just, I mean, that's what I'm hearing you say, Measure Q and general fund?
As general fund revenues increase, we would request additional general fund revenues, and then we would still continue to request Measure Q funds for the street maintenance to supplement those general fund requests.
Okay.
Currently, right now, we're balanced basically on the revenues and expenditures. I mean, I'm probably letting, you know, the budget discussion out of basically balanced and no really increase to our street maintenance budget. And for projects like this, we would rely on the Measure Q funds for these type of more capital type street projects.
But what I'm seeing then is that you're going to have to offset that in the long term with general fund money from
general
the
fund or other sources
besides Measure Q. Okay.
Yes.
Nancy,
could you expand just a little bit on other sources?
Grant funds, as they are available. I don't know with the state budget this year if there's going to be any state grant funds available. We did apply for a grant and were successful in receiving the Green Streets or close to receiving the Green Streets planning grant. So that sets us up for additional grant funds for those types of projects. We're anticipating using on North Morro Bay because they require complete reconstruction. I don't think it's a secret to anybody that our local transportation agency is going to be proposing some sort of supplemental funding measure that will appear on the November 2012 ballot for increased tax of some sort, be it sales or gas. I don't know how successful that would be. Santa Barbara County's had a program like this for about the last 20 years. Charge of the day-to-day operations of the streets, the pothole patching, the two street crew members work under his maintenance superintendent. I'll put my city engineer hat on now. The city engineer is responsible for developing street maintenance programs and the overall engineering of the streets. So we've kind of split that street duty, myself being the city engineer role, responsible for the more the capital side of streets. Joe is responsible for the day-to-day operations of the streets.
And how is that working for you?
You know, it's only been the second year, so I think having the addition of having a direct maintenance supervisor in charge of the two street crew members is a great benefit. I think we're still in a transition period with, you know, moving them over to streets and developing our computerized work order program and getting, you know, a better way to get those inquiries into the street crew and making sure that they can take care of those on a timely basis is still being worked on.
Thank you so much.
Well, I guess it brings back to the same old story, money. I mean, it doesn't sound, the figures you're talking about doesn't sound near enough to take care of our streets, so. It looks like you got a big chore ahead of you for very little money. And so I think we better start looking at how we're going to bring more revenue in this town. And that's one of the main things we should be looking at as a council right now.
Next item, maybe, George. No?
Thank you. I would like to also extend my thanks to you for putting this together. It's exciting to actually have a plan that's going to help us be more efficient with the few resources we do have for this. And it's pretty obvious that this is one of the key things that our residents appreciate and demand of us to provide SRS a service and infrastructure. And I was happy to see with the work being done in North Maine or North Morro Bay area right now to see those Measure Q signs out. I think that was nice that you were able to put that together based on their recommendation from the committee. As far as the information here and the attachments with the different scenarios about how much we can find to put together for the budget, that's more just so we have that in mind going into the budget cycle and we can be realistic about what we can expect as far as going forward and potential options.
That's correct. We're not asking you to commit to committing any funds outside of the budget process to the pavement management plan. That wouldn't be fair to the rest of the city budget to commit to this and then see that we've spent all of our resources on pavement and have nothing for, you know, anybody else.
Okay. The other place I really appreciate is that you do have a significant portion and they're looking at new and improved technologies and systems because it seems like there is a lot of new ideas coming out in the industry, and I know that you're on top of that, and that's really exciting to think that we might be able to accomplish more for less in the future. Question I had, though, was there's no mention of the potential to reduce pavement coverage as part of our overall plan in a place where it's appropriate and practical to think, well, we might not need quite so much pavement and try to whittle that down in places where it's just obviously not needed or necessary.
Well, that would be a document outside of the pavement management plan. This is basically on how we pave our existing city streets. For example, I talked about the Complete Green Streets planning grant. That is where we would develop those new street standards out of to work with the residents, with our fire department, to come up with a street section that works for everybody and maybe doesn't have as much runoff, or included in that street section is a method to treat that runoff. So that is a coming attraction.
Okay, great, thanks.
Our street crew used to be seven, right?
That's correct. Back in the 90s, we had a seven-person street crew. Now we have a two-person street crew. Okay. With seven guys and a paving machine and a dump truck, a substantial dump truck, we could do our own paving operations. Right now we pave on our small jobs with a skip and drag
Rob,
and a dump. Sorry.
You know, the department loses 10% here and 10% there, and you know, the street crew lost like 400%. It's like, I don't know what happened. The Morro Boulevard Highway 1 on ramp, you know the area that I'm talking about? Is that city or is that Caltrans?
I think we would say it's Caltrans. They would say it's a city. Regardless of whose it is, it needs to be taken care of. That pothole is not getting any smaller there. I would suggest that if Caltrans is not going, we're not going to force Caltrans to do anything and just basically take the bull by the horns and conquer our own destiny and just get out there and do it. Tell Caltrans we need to close that ramp and patch that area back in so that, because we'll never win the debate with Caltrans on whose it is.
Yeah, no, you won't.
No.
So
it's better just to do it and thank them for letting us get out there and pave their highway.
It's not that huge an area. All right, getting back to Main Street, did I hear you say that it would be $270,000
About $370,000 to do the section of Main Street between Highway 1 and the more southerly leg of Surf Street. Yeah. So basically up to where there was a project done in the early 2000s that did Main Street from Surf through town to tie into that section.
Well, my chin is on the desk.
you know, almost $400,000 for the equivalent of a city block. Wow. That area needs to get addressed, too, even if it's just filling the potholes. I mean, going in there and doing what I see Walt and his buddy doing every day. It's Joe and I have talked about it recently. You know, it needs to get addressed because I don't know when the $370,000 is going to become available. Do you have that in mind, where that money is going to come from?
Well, we could reprioritize our projects, and, you know, there's an accumulation of Measure Q funds in the street section that we've been kind of waiting to use until we've fully developed the pavement management plan. And that's where we're planning on funding that first year's $500,000 projects out of, would be out of that accumulation fund. That would be the proposal to do. And we could do that project plus some other streets in town with about 2 miles of other streets.
With the remaining $130,000?
Yeah, we could get about 2 miles of microsurfacing done for that.
So that's not, what makes that 200 yards so expensive?
It's because that's so bad, we're going to have to dig out a large area and basically reconstruct the street in there. And then what we would do is, that street carries a lot of traffic. Probably it's one of our more traffic streets, probably about, based on our recent counts, about 9,500 cars on an average day drive that section of Main Street, 9,500 cars per day, average day. Drive that section of Main Street. So it takes a lot of loads on that street. Those vehicles do a lot of work on that street, which cause it to fail. So I think there's some substructure problems where it's the worst. We need to dig that out, put in a new good base section. There may be some drainage issues there.
Maybe.
Oh, we haven't dug anything, gone deep enough there to see if there's water down there. So,
how do you do that? Test bores?
Test bores or a test pit, but we have to close it off to traffic, put a backhoe out there. I would suspect, based on how it's failing, that there's a little bit of water down there that's causing the subgrade to, I didn't mean to get into a real technical, causing the subgrade to pump a little bit, which causes the pavement to flex, which causes that cracking and those potholes develop. So a solution to that would be to dig that all out, lay down a layer of fabric, put base material back on top of that, and then pave on top of that. And then you would cap the whole thing with this either Cape Seal or a thin half-inch to three-quarter-inch overlay over that entire street section.
Okay. When do you see that schedule happening?
If this were approved, too, so we need to get that work done, get the street closed back up again, sealed, before it starts raining.
Okay. And that street's going to last another 4 months?
Yeah. We'll need to be out there probably filling some potholes because we'll get, you know.
I would like to see that. I think a lot of, you know, George and I hear it every other day because, you know, we hang out in front of GAFCO and talk and the whole world walks by, and so I'll say four times a week somebody stops and talks about that very section.
Well, with 9,500 cars or vehicles per day, I'm not surprised by the number of people that comment on that.
Okay. You said several times $400 million roads. It says on page 1, $40
million. Oh, sorry, $40 million. Okay. Yeah, I slipped a decimal.
I'm sorry, Council, to be so long-winded. You want to start over? I'm done.
Call. Sure, I do. I guess my question is, are you asking that money be directed towards that section of street? Is that what I'm hearing?
There's no money, and you know, this is another concern that we get into budget, and then I drag the budget conversation down with streets. Streets is my main focus when we get to the next meeting. You know, we're not in a position to be allocating any funds tonight.
Well, I guess what I was hearing from you is you giving direction that's the section of street that you want to see done at $370,000, and I just want to have clarity that that's not...
I'm not giving it. Did you feel I gave you direction? Other than stating my priority?
I would look for direction from the council if that's your wish to change our priorities.
But did you get the sense that...
No.
So I'm not.
Okay.
That's a misunderstanding.
You were asking for the timelines and when he was going to get started, and it left me feeling like that was the direction
you
were going
with. No, he was clear through
this.
The whole thing. It all depends on the budget.
Okay. I recognize it's
so
a difficult...
I should have couched it with, if it is approved.
Yeah, I recognize it's a difficult and challenging area, but I wouldn't be willing to sacrifice the rest of town. And thank you for the clarification on how the department or that division has been divided up. I think that was what a lot of people haven't had clarity on, so that you're doing the capital projects and Mr. Woods is doing the day-to-day maintenance. So that helped answer some questions.
I just want to add, I can't take credit for the Measure Q signs. That was all Joe doing those Measure Q signs out there. So didn't want to let that slip.
Joe appreciates that. Good job, Joe. Nancy?
Thank you, Mr. Livick and Mr. Woods both.
Whoops, I turned it off again. I think I've learned more about paving tonight than I ever thought I wanted to know, and I understand it's a major issue because I, too, hear a lot about streets from constituents, and we'll just have to do the very best we can. Thank you. Thank you for all your clear explanations of how this works.
George? I want to know where 9,500 cars are going. I mean, that just blows me away that many cars going up that street. I mean, that's that 950, what did you say it was?
9,500
cars.
On average, on an average day, use that section of Main Street.
And I understand that there's a lot of potholes and different streets and the residential area needs attention, but this area is our entrance to our town. This is the first thing people see when they come in here, so I understand Carla's concern that there is other uses for this money in the residential area, but I look at this, I hear more about this area than anything, even more than the residential area. So I just pointed out too, just like Bill, that I'm just pointing it out that it's a big concern here.
Noah?
Yeah, thank you. I'd just like to end, if you could, go over what someone can do if they have a pothole or need in their neighborhood, what the best way to report that is.
The best way to report that is through the city's website. And if you go to the Recreation and Parks through the city department, there's a citizen request form. They can fill that out. That gets automatically transmitted to the maintenance superintendent that will assign that work. So that's the best way. Or they can call Recreation Parks Department and report it that way. And I don't have that phone number memorized yet. I have it on speed dial, but...
Our Recreation and Parks number is 772-6278, and you'll get an automated machine, and you can navigate that through to street maintenance and put in a voice request. Then it'll be transferred into our e-form and then assigned to the maintenance.
D4 George.
Well, there's been a lot of discussion about money here, about different things that we need money for, and I've had a vision for a long time and on this area around the Rock. And I'm not talking about a parking lot out there. It's been a little confused. A lot of people's got this confused that all we're looking for is a parking lot. But I'm actually looking for an area for attraction. It's going to be all the way from a parking area, of course. But we're also going to – I would like to see an area where we have recreation and different things that's going to attract people to this area. I believe this. If we do this right, it's going to be what I say, a great attraction for tourists. And tourists is our main stay in this town, and we're going to have to start bringing more people in so we can fill stuff, such things as the potholes and take care of our streets. And so I'm proposing that start getting serious about the Rock area. I tell people, I says, you know, we who live here, we get kind of blinded by the Rock. We don't see it as it is. But people that come to this town, they're in awe about this Rock. And it seems like I watch cars come into town, they turn right down Beach Street, and it seems like that's the first thing they do is go down to the Rock area and then maybe work themselves back up into their motel or where else they're going. But I remember the first time I came here in 1952 to drive down, and I was a young man, and I seen that Rock, and I just couldn't believe it. I mean, it was just like a big, massive thing out of the water, and it gripped me. And I watch people, I've said this before, how people will come down Beach Street and actually abandon their car and get out and start taking pictures and forget what it's all about. They're in such awe. So I think this area, it needs more than just maintenance of what we're doing out there now. I believe that we need to pave the area to the certain, but also we want to have grassy areas, landscape areas, and recreational places, like such thing as a park course, you know. That's kind of we could even like dedicate that area like a park course. That's a kind of a exercise area they've got in different places. Maybe the Jack LaLanne exercise area or whatever we want to use there. But I think if we develop this area, that we'll really bring in more families to use it. We can. We got a lot of surfers going out there. Some areas maybe we could dedicate to promote surfing. There's so many things we could do. But what I really like to see is staff get onto is a concept. We need a concept plan. And I really don't know where to go to this. People suggested, Cal Poly and different things. But the concept plan is what I'm looking for right now so we can go on with this. And there is right now, I have no idea what this is going to cost. But I believe that if we get going on this, that there will be donations. We maybe use, I've suggested that maybe some of the promotion money to be used here, but some people say, don't start touching on that. But it's all about promoting Morro Bay. And this area is very important to us. And I believe that if this is done right, that this could be one of the biggest attractions on the Central Coast.
Cool. Well, I'm totally on board on this. I see it as a very long-term thing. I think George realizes that, too. The ball has to get started rolling at some point, and that's what he wants to do, and get the ball rolling. But there's nothing to talk about yet. It's all air. So I'll ask, could we get a Cal Poly class to crank out a starting point, a concept plan in the first semester of this year that would tie in with what you've got started?
I think we've used Cal Poly before to develop concept plans that, you know, we've forwarded on to consultants for further development. So, you know, I think we could get in contact with the Landscape Architecture Department or the City and Regional Planning Department. Want to apologize for the staff report that it was so paving centric, just a parking lot, but that's kind of what we took from the
Northern Embarcadero Coleman Park Improvement Program, and you'll see that the recreational areas are Coleman Park and Target Rock area, and then the other two sections, the boating access facilities, would be on the eastern section of this particular concept plan. I don't see any reason why we couldn't go back to the concept planning section and incorporate the area that is north of Coleman Drive and try to include that in this particular program. Previous harbor director and I decided that we would split up this program to best facilitate each one's needs, because the boating has different funding and a different process than we would in recreation as far as our park master planning. And we wouldn't want to, our objective was not to tie the other one down. If someone had momentum that they could go, and the harbor department did take off and have done some investigative work at the Coastal Commission to see if their project and the concepts were going to be viable to continue with. We at the Recreation Parks have not done much with the concept plan. We've been asked to start the master planning process by some consultants. We need to find the money and the time to throw into the master planning of these areas, but there's no reason why we couldn't go take a quick step back and do some more concept planning to include this area. It's a slightly different zoning than the Target Rock area and Coleman Park, but certainly would open itself up to some recreational use, such passive recreational use, such as benches to look at, maybe some small picnic area, so forth and so on. So we use Cal Poly for actually some detail plans. We brought to you a concept plan for the Central Coast Women for Fisheries statue that's scheduled to go out at Target Rock. And they're working on some details, and they've been fundraising for that project. And we'll need to master plan in detail before they come forward with their dedication of this monument. So it's probably time that we start looking at this a little bit more detail and start seriously thinking about the master planning process.
So how would George get this rolling? Here's what I'm thinking, is that this should probably go to Parks and Rec and Harbor Commission. I think their first question would be, well, what's the vision? What do they want to include here? We could talk about that right now. Yes, Rob.
Sorry to interrupt your train of thought, but I just this area has been looked at in the past before. The Waterfront Master Plan did a study of the – that's where I took my lead on my paving-centric ideas from. That was their concept for the pavement of the rock. But that Waterfront Master Plan included other things to do have out there, as Joe mentioned, the picnic areas, the tables, a walkway down to the beach there. So I think, you know, probably that was adopted by council – in the 90s, and we
95.
Should probably 95. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. I think I saw a familiar signature on that on that plan. I think whatever we do, we need to use that as our jumping off point for when we're looking at this area, and forward that on to our Recreation Parks Commission for them to look at that also.
And that has all of the parking, the rock parking lot.
Yes, it does. All that area is studied in entirety.
Okay. You want it back, George, before I pass it down?
I've heard about this concept plan that you just talked about, but I've asked for it, but I've never seen it. Where is this?
I'll make sure that a copy is put in your box.
And this covers the whole rock of the parking. Well, I'm going to call it the parking area.
Yes, it does.
Or
and more.
The what I call now a wasteland out there is what it looks like. So it covers all that.
Yeah, I'll make sure that copies of that is in your box. We'll get it posted. Make sure that's posted on the website, too, for everybody out there to take a look at and see what we can learn from. No sense doing over what we've done before if it's usable.
Clearly. Who wants to go next? Who wants to grab it first? All right, then I give it to you, Noah.
Okay, well, I'm glad you included this concept overview, and I was aware of the process with the joint meeting with the Harbor Advisory Board and R&P, and that definitely bolster it, so it's just holding up better. And overall, I guess I just find myself very concerned that we'd start to look at I look at this as the pavement concept as just kind of, we've got plenty of money, we're looking for something to do. It would be nice, but it's not something that's absolutely a necessity. And I think the concept could succeed without as aggressive a paving option. I do really like the idea, though, of trying to introduce into this concept some improvements along that area, like the picnic tables and the benches and probably better trash receptacles, facilities like that. So I find myself hesitant to start spreading it out even more, particularly with the cost of the pavement side.
Go ahead, George.
Well, I have no intentions of trying to dip into the pavement program money at all. I mean, this is going to come from some other sources. And this plan that you're looking at right now is not anything that I had in mind. I mean, it just that doesn't really make sense to spend that money for that. I agree, because we got to make that area attractive, and that I think you agree with that, Noah. That to bring people into the area, we need to do something. I mean, it, like I said, it looks like a wasteland out there now, or downtown Beirut with all the potholes. When I was at more people come by, and when I was at the Harbor Hut, especially, would stop, and I guess it was the first stop back from the rock. And I don't know why they come in and thought I had something to do with it or something, but that would be the thing they would say. Can't you do something about all those potholes out there? I don't know what they meant for me to do, but anyway, I've had this on my mind for a long time, that this area needs to be improved, and if we do improve it, it's going to be a great attraction. And you're talking about, like I said, revenue, and this is, I feel, is going to bring in a lot of revenue in this town.
So if I could respond, your thought is not necessarily married to this pavement concept, but more general improvements in this side of the rock parking area to help increase the aesthetics and the opportunity for people to enjoy the space and the overall beauty. So it would essentially be taking the work that's gone into this concept plan and adding to it with the parking area potential improvements.
We're talking about the whole area. We're not talking just that.
This is a distraction, I'm afraid. No offense down here, but this is totally distractive to what the concept is of doing the whole thing. This would not go in. And then a park here, I mean, this, you know, forget this and start with a new concept plan for the whole area.
So the way I would see that working, though, is that new concept, or that concept for this area, would be based on the waterfront master plan concept that was identified that you were involved with, and then blended with the current plan for the rest of
blend
the, area
it with this.
The Harbor Walk.
Yes. Agree? Okay. Nancy.
I agree completely, yet speaking for the potholes, they're not all bad. They do keep the speed limit down there. I mean, can't you just imagine young people out doing donuts in their cars out there?
We never did that.
We would never do that. No, never. But I think this capital improvement study process is the way to go. We have the groundwork. I've seen the plan on Joe's wall. You know, you look at the boardwalk picture that we have up here, and it's amazing the number of people, many, many, many of them visitors, who use that area. And it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful, as long as you're looking at the rock or the ocean. But then you look to the right at poor old sad Coleman Park, and that whole strip down there is like it's pretty bad, Mr. Woods. You've got to admit. I mean, your bathroom where the wheelchair got stuck in the sand, naughty, naughty. But, yeah, I think this whole thing has to be done as one concept plan. And we've got some background. I think we just need to encourage staff to move forward with it. And when we have a plan, then we can
start to figure out where we're going to get the money to pay for it. But first, we need a plan. Thank you.
Well, in the defense of the staff, they were told not to move forward on this by members of the last councils. So I, too, have seen this presentation by RRM Designs, and it did go to Harbor and Parks and Rec. They did a good job in going through all this and coming up with this. I think there's elements that we know we're not going to be using at this point, the boating access facilities and things like that, where you're just going to go out and base it until it blows out every time and has potholes. So I'm on board, you know, with moving, bringing, resurrecting this back and moving forward with enhancing the other side of it and seeing how we can phase this in to make it happen.
I have a follow-up question. Just wondering about how you would actually start this with the different advisory boards, and do you feel like we're pretty much on the verge of really getting to the point where we could do the master plan? What would you see if, from what our conversation is tonight, of actually starting to implement that master plan and getting to that point?
Well, we have outline procedures for master planning parks, and there's a process that we would go through. We would start at the Recreation and Parks Department Commission, obviously, and review the work that we would have done as far as a consultant coming in and helping us master plan this. There's a lot of public outreach. There's stakeholders. There's different agencies, quite a few different jurisdictions within this area. So the plan would move forward as we just jumped into the park master planning process.
And you see it as a relatively low work effort to actually introduce this other component, the rock parking lot area, into the existing concept. Does that seem like a pretty easy step?
I think it is at the concept level, without a doubt, particularly if we already have the waterfront master plan that is outlined and it's ready to be reviewed again. So it's just a matter of bringing the three together. I think the phasing is definitely appropriate, and we've already started that with this concept plan in front of you. So it would be a matter of outlining the scope of work and getting that. Once we outline the scope of work, we'd farm it out, and we would try to get as much public input as possible. And we just went through this process with the Teen Center master plan, started with the concepts, went into details, and now we're soliciting for grant monies. So I think the same kind of process would be appropriate here as we master plan on this recreational areas.
Can we talk about timeline for a sec here? Maybe I'll return first to the Cal Poly concept about getting it done in this first semester. Can we run it through the three advisory boards, bring it back here, and make that happen here July 1st?
No, the Recreation and Parks Commission won't be meeting. We've got a parks tour in July, and then our following meeting would be in September. If council had an urgent topic, we would have a special meeting earlier than that. You need us to.
No, it's this. I don't think this rises to the level of special meeting.
Okay.
But if we miss the first semester of school, then we're looking at the second semester, and we're basically until next June. That's a year from now before we have the concept plan that George is looking for, and I think we would like to move a little quicker than that.
Well, I certainly can call up my connections at the Landscape Architectural School that we'll use on the concept plans. They've done a couple projects for us in the last couple of years, some rather good ones. I won't get into detail, belabor tonight's meeting, but I can approach them within the next week or two, provided I can get somebody that's on campus. So the contacts, they aren't home phones, and so I'm going to be at the mercy of who's available at Cal Poly.
Okay, well, I would be supportive of you starting that process, assuming I have support up here. I'm looking over here. I see one nod yes. I see.
Yes, and I also know, is there other... besides Cal Poly, is there other means that we can do this?
The landscaping architect is just one aspect. I think Rob might have other contacts within the university that might help us out.
Still Cal Poly, though, George.
The City and Regional Planning Department.
Yeah.
I think I was saying besides Cal Poly, I mean, the private sector or something to have this done. I'm really reaching out, and I guess I'm trying to be in too much of a hurry with this thing, but I see the importance of it, and I'm sorry that I'm really kind of, I sound anxious, and I really am. Cal Poly sounds great, but I just thought maybe there was other avenues.
Well, usually the price is right when we go to the university, and when we go outside into the private sector, it's a little more difficult to find a volunteer to put in the time and energy needed to get us to the level we could actually move forward with the project. So in the past, when I've gone to Cal Poly, they've taken the original plan for the teen center and gave me 50 different designs. They did a double class on it.
And maybe add that as an amendment just to actually get something started.
Your comment is exactly what I was thinking as well.
We have it here.
Noah. One at a time, please.
Okay, I was just excited about Ms.
I know you were.
I'm glad you were excited.
I don't know that the 1995 plan takes the realignment of the road. Do you have a record? That's 16 years ago. Come on,
no, that wasn't envisioned. The realignment of the road, it mentioned the boardwalk in concept, didn't have the exact alignment for it. So.
I think you can use that master plan as a starting point for what we're talking about here, but you can't just say, all right, we'll just put that master plan and this together, and voila, it's done.
Well, what's this concept C then? It shows the boardwalk and...
Well, this was one of several concepts. This was the one chosen. This is the one that staff is working with, and
it's a beginning.
But there are details to these circles,
right?
Correct.
You have details.
Yeah, there are.
I'm just saying maybe we should look at those details that we already have. Start there.
But that's details for this.
That comes pretty close to the rock, and it does a lot of improvement out here.
I'm sorry. What George is talking about is this area right here, which is the rock parking lot.
I know that, but okay. I thought he said he wasn't that interested in paving. He was more interested in improving the whole area.
Yeah.
And we already have this part, two-thirds of the puzzle.
Well, I think when George, excuse me for speaking
whatever
for you,
whatever you
George,
want to do, George.
When he said, I'm not interested in paving, he was saying, I'm not interested in this plan here.
North.
Yeah.
But are you interested in this plan?
I think this is a great start.
That's what I said.
We also got the bicycle people that, you know, are talking about the bridge and stuff. All this could be working together. And... but this is a good start, you know. I don't know about the boat repair thing. That's kind of a hard. I've dealt with that talking to myself about this thing. The boat. That's a tough deal there, because you're by developing this area, we're going to have some traffic out there. We're going to have more than the 9,500 cars. We're going to have a lot more.
Got to have good.
So it's got to be paved. There's no doubt about it. But we put a man on the moon. We can figure out how to keep the thing from sinking out there, I'm sure. There's people that do that. There's a lot of people talking about this now. I've been talking about it for a while, and they're getting behind me on this. So they want it. So
I don't know.
However we're going to work it.
If your question got answered, Nancy, it's... This really doesn't have anything to do with what George wants, which is this area here. So it's an addition to this.
Well, I thought I heard him say this was a good start. And I'm saying, could we start here to get this show on? Forget the boat thing. I'm sorry, Eric, but that's a little extraneous at this point. If we could do these blue circles out here, or at least look at these recreation facilities, that's going to really improve the road to the rock. That's going to be step one. Step two would be to get somebody from Cal Poly out here to figure out what to do with that rock parking lot. But this is doing something. You were talking about getting the ball rolling and getting started. All I'm doing is trying to figure out a way to get started now rather than a year from now. That's all.
You're right on. I mean, you're right.
Thank you.
To get started.
So but shall we do it?
But like I said, we need a concept so the whole thing is in you know, so we understand where we're going with this. And Cal Poly sounds like the answer here. I don't know where we're going to have the money to do what we got here.
Good question.
Just where was that money coming from?
Yes.
All right. May offer a suggestion.
Sorry, Taylor.
The current direction from council was on this concept plan dealing with Target Rock and with Coleman was to not work on it. So that's the current direction from the past council that staff currently has. I would strongly suggest we bring that concept plan back to you in the first meeting in August, because I don't believe we can do it at the July one, but we could bring back that concept plan to you at Target Rock and as to Coleman, and you can redirect staff to make that a higher priority or where you want to put that in your priority list, and at the same time review the master water master plan, which Councilman, you know, League hasn't looked at, or I don't think any of us has looked at lately. Look at that.
But I'm also hearing, so just back burner this, and all we're trying to do, all George is trying to do is get a concept plan going, so the whole thing gets master planned. That does not slow this down. And Rob just said we'll bring that back, hopefully in August, and get the council decision reversed. Decision being
that whole. Sounds like a beginning to me. And then we'll have information about the quarter system at Cal Poly.
I don't know that I agree with Rob's thing on that. I mean, he's already said he'll start calling. I'm all in favor of him making the initial contacts and you know, getting the motion going.
That's what I just said.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood. I was buying into Rob's, not
That's
buying
That's what
into.
He said.
Is that what you said? I thought you said, bring it back, August, talk it over, and then we go to Cal Poly.
No, we will have an answer
answer.
Hopefully by the August meeting.
I did misunderstand. Yeah. Carla.
No, I was just going to support it. It goes back to what I had said earlier. I think it's one plan, but you're going to do it in phases anyway, and we know we already have this done, so we need to move on the next half. And I see it more as a parks and rec and not so much harbor, unless Eric wants to give us the money. Just kidding. I promised I'd get that in.
I do want to state, because a couple people, or one and a half people anyway, have kind of, the boatyard's never going to happen, that I'm a supporter of the boatyard, that I don't want this discarded. The boatyard is... it's been on the books as long as I can remember. And, you know, if we could ever bring that to reality, that's something that we need to bring to reality. That's something that's really needed in this harbor. And talk about bringing people here. I mean, it would be the only boatyard between Monterey and Santa Barbara. And the one in Santa Barbara is pretty much recreational. So Monterey and Ventura, really, if you talk about working boats. And they bring a lot of money through the community, too. So...
I think I'm just concerned about how you get those boats across the Embarcadero on the road there.
The same way they do it in Santa Barbara. You know, they pick them up out in the dock, and they do them down the little alley and across the road and into the boatyard. Just travel lift, just moving around. That's what travel lifts do. Okay, so where are we at as far as direction here? What is your understanding of where we're at? I'll address it to you, Rob.
The way I understand this is we're going to contact Cal Poly, get some information from them on whether this is a viable project that they are interested in doing from their coursework. In parallel to that, we're going to bring an item, hopefully sometime in the first meeting or as soon thereafter, to council to look at this concept and get authorization to work on that again. And then meld those two concepts together. So we'll create a concept for the rock paving that will interface with the existing concept plan that we have.
Okay, let's not call it rock paving.
Rock improvement. Rock improvement, rock beautification.
Great. Rock paving makes it sound like just paving the whole thing. That's not the vision at all.
Right.
And, you know,
I understand that now.
I have no problem with Carla's alternative surfacing. I mean, I don't, yeah, whatever. Do we have consensus on this the way he just laid it out?
I'd like to make my comment if you don't mind.
Well, okay. Let's try down here then. Do we have consensus the way he just laid this out? Nancy? George? Noah?
Thank you. I wouldn't mind if you would bring back some information about the revetment of improvements there, the stairway element. If we had some more details about the ADA limitations and so on, that would be helpful as we look at the future there.
It's all part of the whole thing. We've talked about revetment this week.
A public meeting?
No, privately with staff.
Great.
But, I mean, it's not a forgotten thing. And we know it's a concern of yours, and it's got to be done. So,
excellent.
And I love the, you know, idea of improving the beach access from that.
Me too.
Okay, so we're not going to take any formal action on this. If you guys have got it, we're cool.
We definitely have it now.
Great. Thank you very much. Future declaration of future agenda items. Carla.
I have nothing at this time.
Nancy.
Nothing at this time.
Declaration of future agenda items. Excuse me, gentlemen. Future agenda item? Noah? Anything else? Andy, thank you. Write us an email. Anything else from council on any subject? Anything from staff? Thank you, Mr. Taylor, Mr. Weiss, Mr. Barta, for staying at the very end. Thank you, staff. Good night. We're adjourned. Yeah, I called him Mr. Newton. Newton is his last name.